This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
I'm Sharad Kutan. Welcome to The Morning Run with me, Tan Chung Han and Koo Soo Chung, with the top business stories of the day. Hogging the limelight, as always, the leader of the free world, Donald Trump. His foreign policy is in focus. It seems to be a change of tone in his approach, and I think a lot of pundits are looking for what's happening and trying to discern how he might move in the future.
All right, real quick, the reason we are talking about this is because tomorrow, Saturday, April 29th, is Trump's 100th day in office, right? So the question here is, you know, how much has he really accomplished, right, in those first 100 days in office? So now, honing in specifically on his tone, some of the observers have said that you could sense that shift in tone starting from February 28th, because that was his first speech to Congress, if you guys remember that, you know, and he was being lauded as, he's very presidential now and being very pragmatic, and perhaps the candidate Trump is different from President Trump. But then subsequently, when you see the kind of engagement that he's had with various world leaders and the kind of policies that he's actually tried, and that's the operative word there, tried to put into place, then the question is it more tone and policy more so than perhaps a bigger strategy?
You know, we take this 100-day thing quite seriously in the media, but Donald Trump doesn't. In fact, I think he's come out to criticize it, saying this is ludicrous to kind of expect serious changes. Yeah, I mean, why 100 days? And so I think he's already questioned that. And in some respects, I think he's correct. I mean, why should the media, use the 100-day marker as something significant?
Well, it's just because we're nice people, that's why. There's a bedding in period. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make here, I think where Donald Trump is concerned, he has no choice. I think he's on the process of being left with a little choice, but to come back to the center to be more conservative. Because when he analyzed a lot of things that he's promised pre-campaign, for example, the Mexican wall and funding from the Mexican government, ironically, things like the Muslim ban, things like his views on the North American free trade agreement and the rescission of that, things like China's position on foreign currency and the manipulation of the yuan, things like that. He's had no choice but to come back to center because he has not gotten the support in his own, on Congress and Capitol Hill, essentially. So he's got to, I think he's eventually over time, over the course of the year, he's going to come back to center.
Yeah, but you've got all this euphoria, within those 100 days,
That euphoria has dissipated.
Right, exactly.
If you look at the US dollar the last few days, it's really come back.
Right.
Yeah, if you remember The Economist from a couple of issues ago, just after Donald Trump was elected, had King Trump, and basically the idea that Donald Trump imagines government as a dictatorship almost, and with supplicants. And so there was the grand silhouette of Donald Trump and a little figure approaching the throne. But maybe what he's had to come to realize is the complex nature of American government, and that so much more negotiation has to happen. And post the failure of the replace and repeal of the Affordable Care Act, he said he would reach out to the Democrats. And so that was very, very important. I mean, signal him really trying to understand governance in the U.S.
Well, the two most recent examples are the failure of his health plan, as well as the tax plan. I mean, obviously, it can't be revenue neutral if you're going to cut taxes by 20 percentage points on an individual basis. So obviously, right, he's got to come back to center.
Well, I mean, again, so you guys are right. There are these really, really pertinent questions now about his broader strategy. But, going back to what Sharad said, in terms of his negotiation, I mean, according to, some, again, observers and analysts, what is troubling here is the fact that he's including the elements of, military force into his, overall foreign relations strategy. So, for example, when he made that 180 on not calling China a currency manipulator, he said a big part of it was, depending on how China will actually help the U.S. in handling North Korea, right? That's one example. He did that 180 on the Middle East engagement as well, with Syria. And Syria appears to be, one of the sticking points, in Russian and U.S. relations as well. So I think that's also a troubling element as well. Now, on one hand, yes, when it comes to, say, domestic policy, yeah, he's coming back to center, you know, due to, you know, his lack of options then, and perhaps lack of support and political will from his side of the political aisle. But I think what's troubling here is military force and how it affects the rest of the world.
Well, I think troubling or maybe assertive in a way that allies might feel is reassuring, because we look at just the news coming out yesterday, the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, being set up in South Korea in order to protect it from a missile attack. And of course, we've had North Korea launching, sometimes an epic failure, but launching missiles. So maybe some people think that this is a good idea, an assertive America willing to take some risks, but in order to protect its allies.
Right. Speaking about being assertive, though, so you look at over at China then, and apparently Chinese regulators are really cracking down on the kind of regulation that is required to, you know, boost investor confidence in the overall Chinese financial system. So you've got comments here from, for example, Mark Mobius. Mark Mobius is very much an investment guru, especially in emerging markets. He spent over 40 years working in EM. And Chuang, I believe you've seen him in person or met him, and he's very well dressed. And that's subjective, isn't it?
He's got a sartorial splendor about him, you know, bow tie and white shoes, a la Ricardo Montalban. But
Fantasy Island.
Fantasy Island.
It's a generational thing.
It's a generational thing.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Anyways, so going back to the whole Chinese,
we're going to be actually talking about Fantasy Island, the Breakfast Girl. No,
what?
Well, New Zealand for Malaysians.
I thought you were talking about Penang. Sorry.
Oh, those Penangites. You can take them out of the island, but you can't take the island out of them.
Out of the island.
All right. From fantasy back to reality here. So China. Regulators over there have been really clamping down on the kind of worrying signs that have been synonymous with the Chinese story for a while now. For example, the kind of debt levels and they're having. So with the clampdown on not just the financial systems, including like the banking sector, you know, insurance companies, etc. We have been seeing, you know, some reaction in the markets. But, you know, according to the likes of Mark Mobius, that's actually a good thing. So he's actually giving them a thumbs up.
You see, I've got a problem with this because, you know, The problem is institutional investors like Mobius, they might favour policies like this when it favours them. But you see, having the big hand of government come in and in a way control financial markets. And financial markets are basically a place where you discover prices, right? And when you have the hand of government coming to control the direction of markets, what happens when it goes against you? What do you do then? Do you disagree? Do you know what I mean? So markets should be free and fair.
As a principle,
as a conceptual argument, it should be free and untrammeled.
Yeah, right? It goes back to this age-old discussion, you know, of, you know, how do you find that balance between regulation versus, you know, free markets, right? If you recall yesterday right here on this show, we spoke about how here in Malaysia, you got the Securities Commission, right? They're coming up with that new code.
But that's different. That's a regulatory framework. That's different. You see, they're not trying to regulate and dictate prices and dictate behavior.
Right.
They're just making sure that the mechanism exists.
Sure.
And, you know, so...
But there's
an important distinction to be made there.
Certainly, but I think at the end of the day, it's also about having that kind of confidence that, you know, investors, you know, and the certainty, you know, that when they enter these markets or when they invest in these particular companies, they know they are adhering to certain best practices, right? So in Malaysia, they see a lot more headroom, hence this new work code. And obviously in China as well, now they're rolling out these regulations in order for, again, you know, investors to have that kind of confidence.
But Chuang, don't you think there is a role for government to play in a crisis, in a situation where, you know, irrationality is ruling, and, you know, to temper the passions maybe, you know, push pause button, something. Isn't that a legitimate move for government?
But it's not a perfect science. It's all about modulating your approach. If you have a light touch approach and interfere too much, then I guess that's quite a nice moderate approach. But if you come in and control it from every nook and cranny, which I think the markets believe the Chinese government is trying to do, then there's more than a hint of disturbance about it.
I mean, consider this. Okay, here's a number here. The liabilities now in China are at 264% of their GDP, and this is the world's second largest economy we're talking about. All right, 264% of their GDP. You know, so when you have this kind of risk and this this huge amount of risk, you know, that's being that the financial markets over there are exposed to, then you got to ask yourself, you know, are free markets really doing their thing, or do regulators have to actually step in and, you know, actually curb this kind of excessive debt? So they have gone about this, I think, over the last couple of years or so. And granted, this year it's a big year for China, given the Communist Party Congress that's slated for the fall, or, you know, pretty much the third quarter of this year. So, you know, they're trying to ensure that there is more stability, you know, ahead of that very, very, a very crucial meeting, not just for China, but obviously for the rest of the world.
Well, you saw yesterday how the Chinese share market tanked, right, most in 4 months. And, you know, investors are blaming these measures by the regulators, such as, for example, issuing guidance and stepping up risk control, issuing guidance on how to improve bank efficiency, to submit the reports on entrusted investments, which are, you know, these funds that Chinese firms send out to external fund managers. So these measures, while good in terms of, you know, having some degree of security to it, has spooked investors.
Yeah, no, but maybe if I can just try to bring it back closer to home here. You know, for example, because of some of these lax accounting standards and or the lack of adherence to corporate governance best practices, right? You're seeing, say, Chinese companies in Singapore actually being affected as well. Now, Chinese companies that are listed in Singapore, they're called S-Chips. And many of them, the SGX, the Singapore Stock Exchange, they have actually told these guys, hey, you got to get out of here. You got to delist because, you know, because of your lax practices. And, you know, so you're seeing this steady, you know, exit of S-Chips who are actually leaving the SGX. So that's going to be affecting markets and investors outside of the Chinese financial system as well. So I think it's something, it's a debate and an issue that we will continue to discuss. But nevertheless, you know, keep in mind this has reverberations around the world.
We'll be back with more top business news after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.